looking at some of the things prohibited or in the seventh commandment. Seen anything that leads to sexual impurity, of course, is prohibited. Spent a few weeks on subject of dress, and we closed last week at modest apparel with, accompanied by, shamefacedness and sobriety. So, modest apparel by itself is not enough. It needs to be worn in proper spirit. Shamefacedness, of course, has to do with reverence, awe, and respect of God. Sobriety has to do with good judgment. Again, to reveal is not good judgment. It's very bad judgment. Sobriety has to do with self-control. Self-control. So even if someone struggles with proper dress, if they have sobriety in heart, they have self-control. They have. And then it goes on to say that becometh women professing godliness. So we're to dress in a way that is appropriate and suitable to a profession of godliness. So dress should be becoming of godliness. God's people should dress in the interest of godliness. Everything we do should be in the interest of godliness. Our clothes should say, I love the Lord. Everything we do should say that. That brings us to Matthew chapter 5, if we turn over there. We see the command forbids another form of adultery. Matthew chapter 5, verse 27 and 28. You have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. So this forbids another form of adultery. There's different forms of adultery. Now in the Sermon on the Mount, Christ deals with the law of God in Matthew chapter 5, basically beginning with verse 21. He deals with the law. His pattern here is he states the law. Notice verse 21. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, and then he states the law. He continues with that pattern in verse 27, verse 31, verse 33, verse 38, verse 43. So he says, ye have heard that it's been said of old time. And then he states a particular law or teaching. In each case, that is followed by, but I say unto you. And as we've seen before, Christ is not undoing the law. Christ in no way is minimizing the law that he stated. In fact, he's doing just the opposite. He takes it to another level. He expounds upon the law. See, the Pharisees were only interested. First of all, they picked and chose what laws they would observe, and then they were only interested in the outward form of that law. People still do the same thing today. They pick and choose and then only concentrate on the outward form. That's what the Pharisees did all through the ministry of Christ. So Christ follows this pattern by saying, "But I say unto you." See it in verse 22, verse 28. Again, you can follow it through verse 32, verse 34, verse 39, verse 44. "But I say unto you." What Christ is saying is that the laws of God go further than the letter. If you just see the letter of the law, you haven't gone far enough. It goes further than that. That is stated there in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness. So it goes beyond modest apparel. It goes beyond that. It with shamefacedness and sobriety has becometh godliness. So the laws of God go further than the letter or what it says on the surface. We've seen this in "Thou shalt not kill." We see it here in the seventh commandment, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." It goes way beyond what is said on the surface. So if we just concern ourselves with the surface, then we are minimizing the law of God. He is saying here in the Sermon on the Mount that the law is not merely mechanical. We must not exclude the Spirit. So in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus establishes the principle that the law must not be thought of in terms of the outward only. But it involves the thoughts. It involves the motives. See, we can obey God outwardly, but if our motive is wrong, then there's disobedience there as well. It has to do with our desires of the heart. And all of that is included in the laws of God. In other words, the laws of God are concerned not only with the outward act, but what leads to the act. What leads to the act? We see when he dealt with the subject of murder, "Thou shalt not kill," he said in verse 22, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry..." Why does he address anger? Because anger is what leads to the act. Now, we realize that not every time we're angry, we kill somebody. But he addresses the emotion that leads to the act. Now, it would be foolish, though some have said it would be foolish to say that being angry with someone is equal with killing them. Well, that's plain stupidity. That's foolish. Well, if I'm angry, I might as well just go ahead and kill them, because the Bible says I'm guilty. You're guilty in a different form. It's not the same thing. And we need to carry that over here when we get to the subject of adultery. So Jesus is teaching here in the Sermon on the Mount that sin, of course, is not merely a matter of actions, not merely a matter of deeds, but it is something within the heart that leads to the action or deed. If we take care of what leads to the sinful action, then we will not commit the sinful act. So this is what Jesus is saying. And expounding upon the seventh commandment, he states the commandment that thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you. And again, some liberal thinkers soon as they see, but I say unto you, they immediately jump to the conclusion that Jesus is doing away with the law. Well, all you have to do is read, and you see he's not doing away with it at all. He's expanding it. He's expanding it to, again, what leads to the act. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her. Now just consider that phrase. That whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her. So we need to concern ourselves here with this look. What is he talking about? Well, it's not referring to an inadvertent look, but it is a purposeful and a deliberate looking for a specific purpose. How do we know that? Well, notice what it says. Looketh on a woman to. T-O. With the purpose of. So he is identifying, he is clarifying the look. It is a look with the purpose of lust, desire, satisfying desires, to lust after her. So he's not referring to your driving your car, you're walking down the road, and it's pretty hard for this not to happen, and nakedness crosses your path. Can't help but see it. Have you sinned? Well, that's determined by what goes through your mind once you've seen it. That's determined by if you continue to look. Now you are guilty to lust. You look to lust. So, looketh a woman to with purpose of lust. The word looketh is clarified by to lust. So what is being condemned here is the purpose of the look. It's what's being condemned is not the scene. It is the purpose of the look, which in this case is lust, which speaks of a desire, a longing, a passion. And in this case, it's an adulterous one. It is a look that gratifies sinful flesh. That's the look that's being talked about. It's a look that stimulates or indulges sinful flesh. You look with the purpose of. This is a look with, again, the purpose of look of lusting. So it is a look of impurity. Now notice, Jesus does not limit his words to, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already. He doesn't stop there. But that word already, hath committed adultery already. The word already, of course, is an adverb. It's indicative of time. It's indicative of time. We could insert there the two words by now. In other words, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her by now. The look. Now, he's not saying that the look is equivalent to the physical act. That's not what he's saying. And people have jumped to that conclusion. Well, I'm just as guilty as if I've committed the physical act. No, he's talking about a different form of adultery. That's just utter foolishness to say that the look is equivalent to the physical act. So we need to realize that. But there is a clarifying phrase here in his heart. That's the clarifying phrase. He hath committed adultery already with her. Lord, clarify that in his heart. So it's a different form. It's not the same as the physical act, but it's a form of adultery. It is a vile, lusting, adulterous attitude of heart that the Lord is warning against here. So the purposeful or continued lustful look is the manifestation of a vile and adulterous heart. So you're walking down the street, nakedness, and happens all the time, nakedness appears. Immediately, we should cover our eyes. We should look the other way. But if we don't, and we continue to look, that is the manifestation of a vile, lusting, adulterous attitude and needs to be confessed and forsaken. It is not the same thing as committing the physical act. Again, it is a form of adultery. In this case, it is adultery in the heart. There's a good example, of course. We all think of David, and he's a good example in this. No, well, he's a bad example, but a good example for what we're saying. 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 2. And it came to pass in the evening tide that David arose from off his bed, walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. He saw a woman washing herself. Now, I don't believe that falls under the category of whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her. This is just, he's out on his roof. Some will argue that David went out there with the purpose. He knew Bathsheba. I don't believe that. I believe, again, David tarried still in Jerusalem. The battle's going on. He should have been in the battle. Probably couldn't sleep that night, thinking about his men in battle. So he gets up and he starts to walk around. I can understand that. I do it all the time. And he walks out on his roof. I don't do that. And he looks over and there is a woman washing herself. He saw something that he did not intend to see. But here comes the problem. Instead of turning away, it says, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon, which means that he continued to look. Now he's guilty of Matthew 5:28. Now, for those who say, well, the look is equal to the act, you mean to tell me that if David would have stopped at the look, he wouldn't have been better off than what he was in proceeding to the act? I mean, certainly someone can see that these are not equal. These are not equal. We need to remember that because it carries over. They're not equal. Doesn't mean that the look isn't sinful. The Lord's telling us it is. He's committed adultery in his heart. He continued to look, and that's when he committed a form of adultery in his heart. He would later, verse 4, commit the sinful act. And David sent messengers and took her, and she came unto him, and he lay with her. Now he's committed the act. But it began with a look. The lustful look was a form of adultery, but it is not, again, equivalent to the physical act of adultery. And that account there in 2 Samuel 11 does reveal, we're not going to take the time today, but it does reveal the grave danger of a lustful look. David not only continued to look, but he thought upon what he saw. Even after Bathsheba went into her house, David continued to think about it. He's committing adultery in his heart. Now, how do you know that? And David sent and inquired after the woman. Well, he wouldn't have done that if he wasn't thinking about it. So he's continuing to think about it. That is Matthew 5, verse 28. And God put roadblocks in his way. David's men said, David, she's someone else's. She's the wife of another man. That was a warning to David. But David, by this time, has lost all sobriety. And he's bent. And off he goes. So it tells us the grave danger. In closing, notice in Job chapter 31, Job chapter 31, and this is very applicable to our day. Verse 1, he says, I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? The covenant was not to look in the way that Jesus is speaking of in Matthew 5:28. You cannot live in this world. You cannot go out in public and not see nakedness. You're going to see it. But you can avoid Matthew 5:28 by making a covenant with your eyes. As soon as you see that nakedness, you turn away. I made a covenant with my eyes. Remember David, he saw that the woman was beautiful to look upon, and then he inquired because he had given some thought to this. Well, this is what Job is talking about. I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? You see, you can't look at something continually and not think about it. That's not possible. So, if you fall into Matthew 5:28, it's not just your eyes, but it's your thoughts also. You begin to think upon these things. And now you're guilty of a form of adultery, an adultery in the heart. Let's look to the Lord.